Pharmaceutical sales pitches, nursing jobs on the increase still, and Washington State nurse staffing agreements. All of this and a look at intracranial pressure. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome back to another episode of The Nursing Show. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and this is episode 9. And if you noticed, I did get to squeeze another extra episode in this week. I'll do that from time to time as I am able. Otherwise, you'll find The Nursing Show released here every Friday. Well, I have come back and am looking at a couple of different things this week. But first of all, let's get the housekeeping out of the way. If you want to get in touch with me here at The Nursing Show, you can send me an email at comments@nursingshow.com. And please send in any suggestions for topics you'd like me to look into, people you'd like me to interview, or suggestions or corrections that you may have for anything I've talked about here on The Nursing Show. We want to make sure this has got good quality information, so if I misspeak something or you have another opinion on something I've spoken about, we can certainly deal with that and make sure that the proper information gets placed out there for Nursing Show listeners. You can visit the Nursing Show site over at nursingshow.com. In addition to the show notes with links from this and every other episode, you will also find other articles, commentary, and links to news and study items that I find throughout the week. And I post all of that over at nursingshow.com. So you want to check that out, and it will take you directly to anything that I've been talking about via the links in those pages. And of course, you can comment on the site beneath each article. So feel free to do that and keep in touch with me here so I know what it is you want The Nursing Show to cover. This is a community effort, and I'd like to make sure that we cover everything that all of you want to have covered here on the show. The first item in the news today is going to be a bit of a provocative item, and it's interesting because it's looking at nurses as soft targets for drug company promotional tactics, and that's just something I hadn't really thought about. I have been following. There's a lot of information coming out and articles and position papers being thrown out there looking at improper relationships or improper influence on physicians and prescribing medications based on pharmaceutical promotional tactics. And yet I really hadn't really related this back to the nursing profession and the influence that nurses have on medications that are being prescribed to the patients that they are in contact with. And this not just refers to nurse practitioners, but all nurses. And it's something that I guess all of us need to keep in mind, whether you're a nurse or a nursing student, because I don't know if we're being adequately prepared to deal with some of the marketing that comes our way, and something that we need to maybe reevaluate and look at. Something that nurse educators can bring into their classrooms and talk about, and something that you can discuss with your peers about what you've run into. We all have pens with product names on it. Some of us have ID badge clips or other items that we've come across or gotten according to different things we've attended. And I have to wonder if that is having an influence on us in understanding our prescribing, if we are prescribing, or influencing the prescribers we're in contact with on the medications that might be chosen. We certainly think about meds all the time, whether it's for ourselves or our families, and express our own preferences, and we can relay those preferences sometimes onto patients as well. So an interesting article, and I urge you to head over and check it out for yourself and think about whether drug company or pharmaceutical company promotional techniques have an influence on your choice of medications. Well, the next article should be of comfort to anybody that's graduating soon from nursing school and wondering if the job market's still going to remain as open as it has been. Well, despite the fact that there is an increase in unemployment here in the United States, there is still going to be plenty of nursing and teaching jobs available. This is a story that comes from a report from the U.S. Department of Labor that's looking at an expected increase in the nation's unemployment rate. And of course, that's going to affect people's health and mental health and physical health if they can't work and can't buy the things that they need. But it also looks at the fact that some jobs are in fact on the rise, including nursing, teaching, logistics, engineering, and computer science, just to name a few. These are the professions that are continually seeing an increase in the available jobs that are out there. So good news for anybody that's getting ready to graduate or maybe move to a different market or a different area in the nursing professions. This is certainly good news for everyone. Speaking of which, I looked at an article that I found over coming from Washington State, from Kennewick in particular, and there has been an agreement between the Washington State hospitals and major nurse organizations there, and they have put in place a staffing agreement that will require that the nurses and the state hospital staffs put together a comprehensive staffing plan that takes into account acuity, patient safety, and nurse-to-patient ratios. This is important because it's a long time coming in a lot of places. If you work in a place or a hospital facility that doesn't look at this kind of thing or doesn't focus on it as much as some areas are, then you can see how beneficial something like that could be. And so this is not going to have effect on any of the job openings because they're always looking for nurses to work there, but they are working on improving staffing. And I reported a couple of weeks ago about the fact that California has entered the final phase of their nurse staffing law that requires a certain nurse-to-patient ratio in a facility. And this is just another step in that direction, at least partially, even though it is not a law per se, but an agreement between a single group of hospitals and nursing organizations. Don't forget, I provide links to everything I talk about here, so you can check out these articles for yourself. And always, always make sure you send in your comments on anything that I've talked about here so that we can share that information back with the other listeners. Good news, and I look forward to hearing from all of you. So we're going to look at intracranial pressure for the tip of the week and get a handle on reviewing this process if it's not something you deal with all the time, because really, in most places, this is going to be something that you're going to notice first. The people that deal with the patients on a regular basis are likely to be the first line of defense for any patient that might be at risk for increased intracranial pressure or even the sudden acute onset of intracranial pressure increases. And so it's important for everybody to kind of look back and see what kind of things you're looking for with increased intracranial pressure. It's important to remember, of course, that the skull is rigid and the vault in which the brain sits is an enclosed space, so that if the brain were to begin swelling, you would have that pressure gradient rise to the point that it would very rapidly cause additional tissue damage. This is not the case, of course, in most other parts of the body where soft tissues can expand and stretch to allow for a certain amount of swelling safely as part of the body's normal inflammatory response. In the head, that's not necessarily the case. Now, normally, the intracranial pressure in the brain is about 10 to 20 millimeters of mercury, somewhere in that ballpark. And it is this baseline pressure that is the point at which the arterial pressure blood flow needs to overcome in order to perfuse the brain. If you increase the pressure in the brain, the baseline pressure, then the blood pressure has to go up even higher to try to get blood flow into the brain. And eventually, of course, this will not be able to happen. So as the intracranial pressure increases and gets closer to that systolic blood pressure, you're looking at the point at which no more blood can flow into the brain and perfuse the tissues. And this can happen very, very quickly. Remember, in an enclosed space, very little additional volume of anything, whether it's swelling of tissues, whether it's the shift of fluids from broken cells into the intracellular space, whether it's a hemorrhaging situation where you're having blood flow from a hemorrhagic stroke or a traumatic injury causing additional fluid to flow into the space. Whatever that is, you're going to see that increase in pressure happened very quickly. Some of our patient populations are more at risk for being susceptible to injuries that would result in intracranial pressure. Anybody with a suspected brain injury, from motor vehicle accidents to a blow to the head to a fall, all of these people could be at higher risk. Anyone with a history of stroke, of course, people with a prior history of stroke or even TIA are at increased risk for having further strokes, and these can be also causing problems. Respiratory issues can cause problems as well. COPD patients with an increased level of carbon dioxide in their systems, this increase in the PCO2 can actually also cause swelling in the brain because it actually will have a vasodilatory effect. And this is one of the reasons why they're used to recommend hyperventilation to increase the oxygen level, get more CO2 out of the system. But this has its own set of issues, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit later on. But that is no longer the immediate recommendation to hyperventilate suspected ICP patients. Patients with meningitis, patients with encephalitis, and also patients with status epilepticus are all at higher risk for having an increase in their intracranial pressure. What are we looking for when we have patients that we want to think about? Well, we should be doing our mental status checks. We should be making sure that they are alert to person, place, or time. We want to make sure that they are not exhibiting any kind of neurofocal deficit. Maybe they begin having one-sided weakness or unable to focus, visual disturbances. All of these things can be indicative of a problem in the brain. So you want to be making sure you're monitoring for a constant level of mental status. And then if the patient has other risks that may lead you to think that this is what's going on, you certainly want to track that down. The other thing is you want to look for an onset of a headache that has no other cause associated with it. Perhaps ongoing seizures and vomiting can be also indicative of increased intracranial pressure. So if you see any of these changes, you want to do a quick neural assessment. Look at their response in their cranial nerves. This is why I talked about this last episode. Looking at the cranial nerves in review, do a quick check of the cranial nerve responses. Have the patient grimace or try to smile or frown. Look at the evenness of the response. Do they have a deficit on one side or the other? Do they have any blurred vision? Do they have equal pupillary response? Are they able to hear clearly? Does there something taste funny in their mouth all of a sudden? These are all things that can lead you to think about what the effects are and what specific area of the brain may be initially affected. It might lead physicians or imaging scans to focus on a particular area of the brain. You want to track these patients with some kind of tool that allows you to assess and trend the patient. This can be done with something like a Glasgow Coma Scale or some other neurologic assessment tool that allows you to trend the patient. And you want to look at increasing problems or worsening of the signs. If you start seeing deficits, if you start seeing posturing, remember, well, there's two different types of posturing. There's decorticate posturing and decerebrate posturing. Decorticate posturing, easy to remember. You're going to have the upper extremities pulling in towards the core. You'll have flexion in the upper extremities. You'll have The opposite of that with the cerebrate posturing, which is much worse, and you actually see extension away from the core. So I use that to remind me of decorticate and decerebrate. Again, corticate to the core, your flexion to the center of the body. And so when you start seeing posturing, you want to make sure that that is noted and treated as the severe emergency situation that it is indeed showing. This patient is rapidly deteriorating, and when you start seeing posturing, depending on what your location's protocols or what is recommended, these are the patients that you may want to consider attempting to provide some hyperventilation to get that PaCO2 down to the 30 to 35 level, where it normally is running 35 to 45, just slightly increasing their oxygenation and decreasing the percentage of CO2 dissolved in the blood. All of this is going to maybe help reduce some vasodilation, but it is not going to be a long-term fix. It's going to be a short-term fix while you try other things. Of course, you're waiting for some other intervention and procedure to occur. It might be a craniotomy, placement of an intracranial pressure sensor, some kind of relief valve with a drainage device. All of these things are going to be ways to attempt to relieve that intracranial pressure or monitor that intracranial pressure to see if levels start to decrease on their own. In the meantime, you're going to want to make sure that this patient is positioned and taken care of in such a way so as not to increase their pressure. And there are things you can do. You want to make sure that they are only seated slightly elevated, a semi-Fowler's position. You don't want to elevate their legs because you don't want to increase the venous pressure. You don't want to do anything that would increase their abdominal pressure. So you don't want them sitting up too high because that increased abdominal pressure puts pressure on the thorax and causes reduced venous return so that the venous pressure has to overcome that pressure as well to return to the heart. So these kind of things are what you need to look at. Increased vagal stimulation can also increase intracranial pressure by putting additional load on the cardiovascular system. These are just some little things you need to think about and resolve. There are, of course, treatments involving mannitol and other diuretics that might be effective in removing some of the fluid from the vascular system, and these would also likely be in place in some situations. So you need to prepare and review those medications as well. But anyway, that's a quick look at intracranial pressure and some of the things you do for an increase there, and you can review that whenever you want. I want to thank you for checking out another episode of The Nursing Show. Of course, you can check out everything I've talked about and links to everything in the show notes over at nursingshow.com. You'll find everything there. And if you don't, I want you to get in touch with me. You can reach me at comments@nursingshow.com or leave a comment directly on the show notes link there at the bottom of each show notes page. You can comment there. I will always be interested in hearing from you, whether you have suggestions or comments or corrections. Please make sure you keep in touch and check back regularly for all of the articles, study links, news links, and everything else that gets posted at The Nursing Show between episodes of the audio recording. In the meantime, I'm going to wrap up, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music, a great way for you to hear a little bit about what's going on in the independent music marketplace. This is from an artist I've played before here on the show by the name of Matthew Ebel and his song, Downtown. This is a brand new one from Matthew, and I'm happy to play it for him. If you like what you hear, you can check out Matthew's website and his music directly at iTunes using the button I have in the show notes, or get in touch with Matthew and let him know you heard it here. In the meantime, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding you to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show.
Sell, or your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money, but honey, your daddy.